I'm Matt Baum, and this is the Ministry of Hemp podcast, brought to you by ministryofhemp.com, America's leading advocate for hemp and hemp education. It's the Ministry of Hemp podcast. My name is Matt, and I'm your host. And today on the show, I'm going to be talking to Doug Fine. He's an author of the book American Hemp Farmer, and I can't wait for you guys to read this. But before any of that, I want to send a huge thanks to everybody that has checked out our Patreon page. You can find it at patreon.com/ministryofhemp. Of course, there'll be a link to that in our show notes. And huge thank you to everybody that has decided to help support us in spreading hemp education and taking a stand for legal hemp in the United States. Seriously, thank you so much. It is so cool to have this kind of support. Be sure to get over there and check out all the extras we have. We've got a newsletter that'll keep you in touch with everything we're doing at Ministry of Hemp. I do podcast extras over there. We just threw up an article on Ministry of Hemp's time at South by Southwest. All kinds of cool stuff with several different levels. Please check it out. And if you already have, again, thank you so much. Doug Fine is a self-described solar-powered goat herder, comedic investigative journalist, best-selling author, and pioneer voice in regenerative farming, including cannabis and hemp. He has cultivated hemp for food and seed building in four U.S. states and teaches a Sterling College hemp class in Vermont. In addition, he's an award-winning culture and climate correspondent from five continents: NPR, The New York Times, and The Washington Post, among others. His books include American Hemp Farmer, Hemp Bound, Too High to Fail, Farewell My Subaru, which was a Boston Globe bestseller, Not Really an Alaskan Mountain Man, and First Legal Harvest, a monograph that was printed on hemp paper. Willie Nelson calls Doug's work a blueprint for the America of the future. The Washington Post says Fine is a storyteller in the mold of Douglas Adams. When I interviewed Doug for this show, I had read about half of his new book, American Hemp Farmer, and since I've finished it, it is wonderful. And like I said, I can't wait for you guys to read it. Here is my conversation with author, solar-powered goat herder, and comedic investigative journalist, Doug Fine. So Doug, you've got a new book coming out, and this is your second book on hemp.
Yes, and well, it depends on how you count it. I'll tell you this. It was first I wrote a book on psychoactive cannabis, regenerative psychoactive cannabis called Too High to Fail, and then wrote Hemp Bound. And then in between Hemp Bound and this new one, American Hemp Farmer, I put out a hemp printed monograph called First Legal Harvest, collaborated with the good folks at Colorado Hemp Company on that one. And so you could argue this is my fourth.
Okay, fair enough. No, I'll count it. That's awesome, by the way. So tell me how this got started, this journey. Like, you've been a reporter for a long time and you've been an author sort of writing these long form reports on what you're doing. How did you get started in this?
I'm an extreme left-brain person, and so I'm a real sort of verbal communicator, and that's where my skill set is. And it's also, I do enjoy it, especially when there's humor involved in any kind of presentation, whether it's written or performance or anything. I love doing it, and so it's I feel very lucky that that's who I am and what I've always been. The journey, though, to be covering the cannabis hemp plant, you know, I could talk to you about the origins, and there are some cool, you know, some origins to it. But what's been sticking, Matt, with my mind lately is the where we are now and what I've learned about my own relationship with plants and all of our relationships with plants. There are people, of course, farmers, people who are born into farming,
right,
who understand their relationship with plants and how it's as complicated and as interesting, at least, as relationships with animals and all that kind of thing.
Sure, sure.
But totemically, I've always been more of an animal guy, like, you know, really good with animals. And it's through journalism and that I've learned about the cannabis hemp plant and expanded my sort of, love and appreciation for plant intelligence.
Okay. So you were never a farmer. You never came from a farm background, right?
I came from the opposite. I came from the way I kind of sum it up is the New York suburbs when Madonna was like a virgin.
Okay. That's good. That's really good. And you decided, you know, I've had all these outdoor adventures. I fell in love with goat herding. Why not grow hemp and just threw yourself into it?
So, yeah. So I lived in Alaska for a number of years and I subsistence fished there. And I really learned about being a member of the animal kingdom and an ecosystem and loved it and wrote a book called Not Really an Alaskan Mountain Man. And then wanting to see about being self-sufficient energy-wise, I moved to New Mexico where you can kind of point a solar panel down towards the ground and still get enough power for your day. And lived and continue to live that lifestyle. Wrote a book about that called Farewell My Subaru. And then was interested in the end of cannabis prohibition and the revival of hemp. But what was the catalyst to make it my next sort of mission was my next door neighbor in New Mexico. And when I say that, I mean very far away, out of shouting distance when we're both in our homes. He's a retired guy from Kodak and minding his own business and self-medicating with cannabis for PTSD for military service, and gets not only gets raided, but for a few plants, and for amount that today is totally legal.
Right. Thank God they took him out, though. We can't have anything like that going on. How dangerous. I mean, a guy with a few plants taking care of himself. Good Lord.
Oh, man. And putting all of our us in danger, actually.
I mean, really?
Aerial stuff. It was crazy. It was like, I don't know if you've been around full bore raids, but it was like living in Apocalypse Now. There was planes, helicopters, uniforms of every description. I had to wade through submachine guns to get past his ranch to my ranch, and not okay.
Well, if you're going
to
put a raid on, you may as well put on a show too, right? I mean, come on.
Yeah, right.
That's right. Good Lord. So from there.
Anyway, that's what made me decide I was going to write about the end of the drug war. And so I've been kind of off and on that topic for the last 10 or so years. And that's what I'm doing. I'm putting my comedic investigated energy into cannabis hemp. But this time around, Matt, it's about hemp industry has started.
Right.
It's for real. I've been part of it because I'm sick of pundits who talk about stuff and don't actually do it themselves. So I'm like, going to try myself. And I don't consider myself an expert, but I'm, 5 years into my own hemp planting, 2 or 3 years into my own product. And this new book is really about suggesting what modes, not necessarily just my own modes, but all the people I've met for being a successful entrepreneur as a farmer entrepreneur. In other words, regeneratively producing hemp in such a way that you're doing good for your community, your family, your bottom line, but also for humanity's climate change mitigation efforts.
I think, one of the things that I loved from whatever, and I haven't read the whole book, I read about half of it, and I love the way you write, and I love the humor you inject in it, because otherwise this could be really dry and just come off as, oh, great, another hippie has decided he's going to tell me a good way to, do this stuff. But I love that you made the choice. Not only am I going to discuss basically a 20-acre farm, I'm going to try to make a living on it. Two, what was that decision like? How did you, I would guess you were single, but you write about your wife and kids and stuff. How do you turn to the family and say, okay, not only am I going to write this book, I am going to write a book about how we try to live on this. How does that decision play out in the family?
Definitely having a supportive family is vital and essential and entire. If you're going to be any kind of farmer or just any kind of entrepreneur, let alone both.
Right.
Everybody has to be on board. And so for that, I'm extremely very, very thankful. In truth, though, while I am on what I like to think of as a 5-year game plan for the product that I put out, I am lucky compared to many of the other people who are covered in the book in that my income is not dependent upon immediately selling large numbers of that product.
Like, it's not that you didn't start from zero and go, okay, yeah, this is it. I'm not taking any other money from book sales or anything. No, I mean, I get that, which is good.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to live. I understand.
But I am trying to be successful at it, and I've got some great new partners for the product that I do. So I am trying to walk the walk, and so I appreciate the question. But in truth, when we're dealing with some real code red issues in hemp, and I bet you've talked about it here on Ministry of Hemp before, in terms of like the necessity of getting the THC level at least up to one to start, and changes that have to happen in the recent last year's draft regulations, USDA regulations. So we have some code red stuff going on. And for people who are dependent on it, who have put all their nest egg and their livelihood and investment into their hemp enterprise, these decisions getting fixed for farmer, like, this is not a joke for them. And it's not a joke for me either, but it's just not as mission critical. Sure. So I guess I can take a more relaxed approach to it than some people can.
But it is terrifying. It's absolutely terrifying. If you're a farmer, you decide you're going to grow this stuff and you're going to do the research like you did. You had partners in Oregon, right, that you were working with to get your hemp
Oregon
plant?
And Vermont, both, yeah.
Okay. And what was that like when you decided, all right, I know I need to go find a plant that is below 0.03% THC so you don't get raided like your old neighbor or just told to destroy your field. I mean, that, are you initially calling your shot, taking your best guess at who to work with and planting it and just hoping for the best? Was there terror there?
Well, I don't think there's terror, but that is a really good question because I think, and the book points this out, I think the hardest part for me, what I found in now 3, 4, 5 years at this, is choosing the right partners. And right. Many of us, probably most of us, learn the hard way. And there's a section in the book which says, you know, plan for plan B. Like, you are not going to make all your right decisions right at the beginning. And so the partners, the folks that I work with now, my colleagues in Oregon and my colleagues in Vermont, are both people that are in it for the long term, like I am, that are, you know, have similar dispositions. Because, you know, we all kind of, if you ask someone like, okay, if you were going to pair up entrepreneurially with someone, what would you want in a farmer type enterprise? You'd say, well, similar values on organics, sure, farming skills, honesty.
Sure.
Those are all important skills. But that doesn't mean that you're going to be a good business match. And so I would urge people to really, really look carefully before they leap in with someone on the entrepreneurial side.
Did they think you were insane when you came to them and you were like, look, I'm not a farmer, I'm a journalist, and I have this idea for a book and I want to do this? Did they think you were crazy, or were they like, great, let's do it?
Well, the partners that I have now are more experienced than I. My partner in Oregon, who's written about a lot in the book, Edgar Winters, he started cultivating hemp in 1957. He might be the longest cultivating American hemp farmer at this point. He's got a really fantastic backstory and an organic mindset, and he's been absolutely a great mentor. And so he didn't think I was crazy at all. And one of the sentiments that we all share, all the people that I really work with, I mean, there's so many people that I mutually support. We, you know, we support one another and want each other to succeed. But in terms of people that I'm really partnered with, we share something, which is, all along, we have not been interested in just following the CBD gold rush. That we love cannabinoids. Who wouldn't love cannabinoids?
Sure,
they're great.
Sure.
But like, it's really about food and next generation industrial components. Hemp is a superfood from the seed, as we know. And this stuff is less of an immediate gold rush and more of a long-term play. And that's something that we all had in common going in.
That's now, let me ask you, when we first started talking, and I don't think I even recorded it, you mentioned about how you started with animals and the connection that you felt to animals. And from there, you felt this connection to this plant. Tell me about that a little bit. How did that develop? How did it go from your goats to hemp?
And I think we all have sort of totemic energy synchronicities with, not to sound too woo-woo.
No, I love it. I love it. I am smiling. I was, when you started there, I was like, here we go. <You know?
laughs> And to admit it, like, we could say this, like, I could say, you know, I think I'm decent at goat ranching. You know, I think I've taken to it. The goats like me, and you know, I love them. You know, they know I'm not rushing. I'm not like resenting my, you know, whatever it is, 20 minutes twice a day spent milking and, you know,
right,
the other care you have to get. I enjoy it the way you talked about it earlier, before we went on the air, for about your hobbies.
Yeah.
And so But with plants, it wasn't that I didn't respect plants. It's just that my connections tended to be more with animals. And it's through now, you know, many, many years of journalism about the hemp plant and then finally leaping into planting it that I've come to recognize and feel comfortable speaking about plant intelligence. And it continues. I was just talking to my Vermont partners the other day. The reality of the situation right now is that some of our seed in Vermont, which is organically certified, something I'm really proud of because of, you know, when you have a plant that 5 years ago was some kind of ridiculous felony and now you've sure. got federally certified certifiers come. It's a good feeling them call, you know, saying USDA organic on your crop.
Right.
So my colleagues, great colleagues in Vermont that I work with also written about in the book, some of our harvest from last year, we think we want to now use for experimenting with food product as opposed to selling it for its genetics because it's good genetics or using it immediately in our other products, but just use a portion of it to see about it as a straight up food product, like just research, do our own research on that. And that is 100% the plant telling us what it wants to do. Like just the logistics of where our seeds are, where our seed cleaners are, what our winters were shaping up like before next year. The plant was just like your goats or your fish will tell you what they want. The right. plant was telling us what we want. And I've started to really accept plant intelligence. And so some people out there are going to say, oh, that's a heartwarming story. Or, oh, I'm going to have my eyes open for plant intelligence. But most people who are listening to this, who are already hemp farmers are going, duh, because they probably already recognized like that their totemic connection was to various plants. For me, it's new and it's beautiful to learn something when you're several decades into life, you know?
Sure. We'll get right back to my interview with Doug, but first, a short word from Ministry of Hemp Editor-in-Chief Kit O'Connell about our Patreon page. I know, I can't stop talking about it.
Hi, this is Kit O'Connell. I'm the Editor-in-Chief at Ministry of Hemp. I hope you're enjoying the Ministry of Hemp podcast and the articles we've been publishing recently. But today I want to talk to you about the newest way that you can support what we do. So we're launching a Patreon at patreon.com/ministryofhemp. And this Patreon will help our readers and fans contribute to what we do. With your help, we'll be able to make our podcast and produce even more great articles about science and information about hemp and CBD. We'll publish more recipes and more guides. We'll be able to work with more journalists, chefs, and authors of all kinds. Not only that, but by joining our Patreon, you'll become a hemp insider. We're launching a special newsletter just for our patrons. Each month, we'll work with experts and advocates and other industry professionals to give you an inside look at hemp and offer you ways to help the return of our favorite plant nationwide. To get access to this new newsletter, you can donate any amount on our Patreon, even as low as $3 a month. For a few dollars more, we'll send you some Ministry of Hemp stickers and even samples of our favorite CBD products. If you join before February 15th at $25 or more, we'll give you a Ministry of Hemp t-shirt as well. So if you love hemp and the work that we're doing at the Ministry of Hemp, I hope you'll support us. You can join at patreon.com/ministryofhemp. That's patreon.com/ministryofhemp, which is all one word. Thanks.
What kind of food products are you guys thinking about doing with yours?
So the product that I already, and you know, please don't, folks, don't take this as a commercial, shop locally, I'm small batch anyway. The product that I already do is called Hemp, and it already has hemp seed oil in it. It's a farm to table product with hemp flour and hemp seed oil. That's it. That's the only ingredient. So it's called Hemp. And it already is potential to be a superfood, but because I'm really walking very carefully to becoming officially a food product with all FDA now leaping into hemp. Thus far, I've always marketed it as a massage oil and a bath oil because it's got an entourage effect of cannabinoids that I think has this almost alchemical relationship with the lipids from its own plant, the seeds from its own flower. That it relaxes me, and I've been told sure. that this is the, you know, one has to be careful about claims that it's about the entourage effect of the cannabinoids, right?
Right.
So, and they're in, I should say, very low levels, all of them, not what today people would consider maximum milligram dose of any of the cannabinoids. And yet I like it. It works. I enjoy the product. So that product is already dialed in to be officially a food product. It's going to be a superfood that's also a cannabinoid. But what we're talking about doing now is taste profilings on pressing the seed for the just straight up seed oil, just straight up as a nutritive seed. Things like hemp hearts. We were even talking about doing chocolate or cacao covered whole seeds. And then the one other element that's really exciting on the horizon is that hemp protein powder. That's the byproduct when you press the seed oil, is going to be, it's a great human food, but it's going to be a great animal feed. And there's a lot of people, as I'm sure you know, you've probably had them on your Ministry of Hemp. There are a lot of people working to make sure that animal feed is, that hemp is approved as an animal feed.
And we're getting that. I know they're definitely pushing for it right now. And a lot of people want that. Do your goats eat hemp? Are you feeding them hemp?
They love it.
Yeah.
They love it. Yes.
That's awesome. Absolutely. That's so cool. So tell me, when you were getting started, I liked how in the book you wrote about how Michael Pollan, who's an author that I adore, talked about how this plant has been around for millennia. Like we've been growing this and it has been giving us things, whether it's like you said, cannabinoids or sandals or, you know, rope or whatever. What was it that drew you to that idea of it? Because you went, a lot of people get to the CBD bubble, like you said, and go for the gold there and just stop. But you're talking about growing hemp for food, for industrial, you know, like that's really the hard part. What's the attraction there? Is it just because that's what the plant is telling you that it wants?
Matt, I feel righteous when I feel like my career is part of an effort to save humanity and give a good life to my kids. So that's a big part of it, is like feeling good about going to work each day.
Yeah.
And when we have an industrial pipeline where the stuff, our stuff, all of our stuff, our rocket door panels, our car door panels, is made from biomaterials, not just hemp fiber, but all kinds of renewable biomass and regenerative biomass. And we're not, you know, burning as much dinosaur juice.
Right.
That's a good sign. And then superfood. I mean, it truly is a superfood and has long been recognized as that, because humans have bred for it to be a superfood with great proteins and amino acids and anti-inflammatory properties. And so, I remember when I was researching my earlier book about hempbound, that I was ostensibly on an interview about hempcrete, and one of the graduate students at the Manitoba College where I was looking at a hempcrete project said that where he grew up in Iran, that they didn't have Doritos and pretzels like for soccer practice snacks, that everybody just went to the vendor on the street who roasted hemp seeds, and the word shadineh in Persian means king seed.
That is so cool. I didn't even know it. Like, I didn't even know that was going on. Honestly.
Yeah. I mean, it's prohibition that's been the aberration, really.
Right.
You know, it's amazing how much can be remembered and forgotten in 77 years.
Absolutely. And one of the things that I think is amazing about hemp as a crop in the United States right now is the fact that prohibition was bad and it set us way back, but it also allowed us to have a very true version of this plant that hasn't been modified a whole lot. We're returning to it almost. Can I ask you, what was your first harvest like? I mean, was it just an instant success? I mean, did you plant this and you followed the instructions and it worked?
The first harvest was really beautiful, but you hit on something there really important in that question about that there can be upsides to this, like three generation enforced
right
break with this plant, from it going from being one of humanity's favorite plants to being one of its most vilified plants and back is a really interesting thing, because you could draw a lot of conclusions about exactly what hemp cannabis prohibition paralleled, but things like all the horrors of the 20th century we could list.
Oh yeah.
Weren't feeding their endocannabinoid system, but also, that we live in a society where, although there is now a renaissance of healthy living and regenerative farming and eating and everything, the majority of the people on the earth are not eating healthy diets. And so that hemp can come back and provide this healthy, tasty solution is a great thing. But also on the business end is what I find really interesting, is that as someone who is developing genetics with hemp, right? Needless to say, I come across folks who are interested in working on the genetic model of what you might call the 20th century way of distributing seeds, which is, to put it bluntly, farmers have to buy it from you every year if you're right. a seed provider and you don't own your food. You don't own your genetics.
And you're growing somebody else's seeds, basically.
Yeah, and that's not how I want to farm. And so I and others are looking at a different model. And it seems so weird to folks who are like, they think that what's been going on for the last 75 years and the way farmers have been treated is like normal. And they're trying to recreate it now. And I'm thinking, you know, when Charles Ingalls and the Ingalls family was going out Little House on the Prairie and with their wheat seed and starting their wheat crop, they were not serfs to the company that they brought their wheat from.
No, they're and just farmers, basically.
Yeah. So the business model that we're able to recreate, and when someone says, hey, that's never how agriculture's been done, it's like, tough. You banned our plant for 77 years. We're doing it our way now. And if you want to try and rip off farmers or... Let me be fair. There is an argument to be made, a legitimate argument to be made, that as long as supply is consistent, the people that are selling, let's say, seeds that a farmer might want to grow for a food product on large acreage, they probably are offering it at much, much lower prices than someone like me and others who would be offering right of replication and the ability to own genetics.
I'm in Nebraska. Afterwards. Corn is a perfect example, you know?
Yep.
It's sad.
You're right.
But like, that's why there's so much of it, too.
Exactly.
So fair
enough, right? Different business model. But just to answer your question about the first harvest, I got to tell you, my son was with me on the first harvest that I was really fully part of. I'd been covering hemp for years and cannabis and hemp both for years. But the first crop that was really I was part of, my son spent his sixth birthday harvesting and loved it. It's a great memory for everyone. And I have a great picture of like, you know, a bundle of his hemp and like covering his whole body. And it did go well. We were partnered with a great, terrific farmer that first year. And I learned a lot from him. I'm very grateful to the first partners that I had when I first started out. And so I would say that it was a combination of good fortune, good weather, good genetics, good partners. Yeah. But yeah, the first crop was a high benchmark that I still like judge every year's crop by, like, how does it look compared to 2016 in Vermont?
Sure. So let's say you're not an author, you don't have any other money coming in. Can you live on this? Like, could this be the one thing that you do?
Not yet. I'm excited about a new partnership that I have. So I have these great friends that I've known for 7 years, these great women, Kim and Dana, who run this health center in Tucson that is just trusted in the community of helping people, especially with cannabis. Mm-hmm. And they're not a dispensary, but they do have sales of various things, including hemp products. And so there are people that I trust, there are people who trust me, and there are people who have an existing body of customers in a major city who trust them. And they are talking numbers that if we decide to, we're still deciding how much acreage to plant for this year, 2020. And if we really go for it, let's say 2020 even just isn't yet another kind of, I don't want to say a practice year, but a growth year. And it's 2021 would be before there would be a significant amount of income for my family. And you're asking such good questions. I'm glad you asked that because it's easy to advise people to have a 5-year game plan and say, oh, you better be ready. Like, best laid plans, you're not going to make money for the first couple of years, especially if you're doing it right.
Of course.
Especially if you have soil to clean up.
Right.
But if you're a farmer that's struggling and has a mortgage, like, you need to make it work. So it's a tough decision, but you got to have that long-term game plan.
It's like a matter of what do you have to lose, basically, in that case.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and this wasn't like a gotcha question, like, well, he's an author. Of course he can stop and do this. And blah, blah, blah. He's got that fat NPR money, I'm sure. So, you know. So what's the next book about?
Good question. So American Hemp Farmers, what we've been talking about now, comes out here in 2020. And the world's like kind of open on the next one. I have a collection of comedic essays unrelated to hemp. That I've been working on. And I'm also developing a TV show of the same name, American Hemp Farmer.
Oh,
that
awesome.
Is related to the, so I hope folks, it's not picked up yet, but I'm optimistic about it. And so,
That's very cool. Yeah.
Eyes and ears open.
So, okay. If you're going forward, do you continue? Is hemp a part of your life now? Are you a hemp farmer now? Is this this is the life?
I'm about to apply for my New Mexico permit. So my commercial work is not at home in New Mexico, and New Mexico permits are pretty expensive. They start, you know, hover around $700-800. And so it's just for like personal use. We're using our fiber from last year's harvest to like do a hempcrete patch on our porch.
That's cool.
There's like a little door jam home.
You made your own hempcrete?
Yeah.
That's awesome. Isn't that cool? That is awesome.
But I mean, very micro amounts, man. You know, not a huge.
Oh, sure. Amount. Yeah.
So what I'm getting at is, yes, I'm growing for my own family's food and fiber needs. And one of these years we'll grow enough at home so that, because my sweetheart makes a lot of our family's clothes in general, and including hemp clothes, but not yet from hemp that we've grown. So that would be cool.
Yeah. So like that, I mean, the next step, that's one of the things I'm really excited for is hemp material and hemp processing of, you know, fabrics and whatnot. And it seems like we are so far behind right now. And it's just, there's no reason whatsoever. Doug, I love the book. I don't want to keep you any longer. You've got kids and goats and whatnot. Is there anything that you want to touch on that I didn't touch on that we need to mention? I'm going to edit this too. So this part will go out. We're just going to sound super slick. Don't worry about that. But is there anything
you did a fantastic job of covering the bases? I guess I would say to leave folks with, first off, thank you so much for your support of American Hemp Farmer, and thanks for reading it thank you. The goal is to help farmers, as you know, Matt, from reading it. So that's really why I wrote the book. If folks want to follow me at Organic Cowboy on Twitter and Instagram, and my website's at DougFine.com, where folks can sign up for my periodic dispatches from the Funky Butte Ranch, everything about regenerative living and hemp and beyond. And thanks for keeping an eye out for future projects.
Hey, last question, and I just thought of it. What did you feel any pushback from other people that are farmers and whatnot that thought this guy's faking it? This guy's getting in it just, you know, because as a fashion statement or something? Was there anybody that pushed back against you?
I felt almost complete support since getting into hemp. And I think one of the reasons was, I mean, the first year that I planted, you know, myself was 2016, and there were not, I forgot, like 700 something permitted farmers that year. So
yeah, maybe,
you know, that being back that early, I consider myself learning every single time I put a seed in the ground, and I do not consider myself an expert, but at least I've been at it enough to wear a badge of legitimacy. And that's my, something I'm going to always try to do is to walk the walk, because nobody's perfect. And, you know, it's not just about growing hemp organically, regeneratively and all that. My product, I spend 50 cents per label on compostable label with non-toxic stickum. It's really expensive to be righteous these days.
It's hard. It's very hard.
A role model here, because you don't want people calling you out and going, why is there plastic in your packaging and stuff like that? We're trying to save humanity here.
You got to be really careful every step of the way. And it's not just gatekeeping and whatnot. I mean, if we're going to do this, it's important to do it the right way. But yeah, it's not easy. Doug, you're doing it the right way. I love the book. I'm excited for other people to read it. I hope you get this TV show, because you're a riot and this would be fantastic. And we need more of this. We need more people that not only can tell the story and spread the word, but they can do it with a little bit of humor and make it relatable. And that's what I really liked about your book. That is not to say that all the other scientists and farmers I've interviewed were super boring. You were just great. Okay. That's all I'm saying.
Well, bless you for that. And thank you so much. No, thank you to you and the Ministry of Hemp. It's a great resource, and I'm sure you got a ton of followers, but I hope everybody's paying attention and watching.
Hey, we'll keep spreading the word if you do, man. Thank you so much for what you've done. Yeah.
Thank you, brother.
You can follow the further adventures of Doug over at DougFine.com, and you can find him anywhere on social media with his handle at Organic Cowboy. I'll have information in the show notes about how to pre-order American Hemp Farmer. It would be really cool to help Doug get on the bestseller list, so if you get a chance, get over there and pre-order American Hemp Farmer. I know I've gushed about it the whole episode, but I loved this book. And that about brings us to the end of another episode of the Ministry of Hemp podcast. My name is Matt. I have been your host, and I want to thank everybody that is supporting us with your downloads, our Patreon, or just asking questions. You can call me at 402-819-6417 and ask your hemp-related question. We will play it later on one of our hemp Q&A shows, where Kit, the editor-in-chief of ministryofhemp.com, and myself play your questions on the air and answer them. So please, shoot us your questions. You'll be able to find that phone number in the show notes, along with information about how to pre-order Doug Fine's book and all kinds of other cool stuff, including the full written transcript for this episode, because at Ministry of Hemp, we believe a more accessible world is a better world for everybody. Be sure to get over to ministryofhemp.com and check out all the latest stuff that we're throwing up there, article-wise, and let us know what you think about everything we're doing at all of our social media. You can find us under the handle at Ministry of Hemp or / Ministry of Hemp. Until next time, this is Matt reminding you to take care of yourself, take care of others, and make good decisions, will you? This is the Ministry of Hemp Podcast, signing off.